This is the writer's voice on the Virginia Voice, and for the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean. Howard Owen is the acclaimed author of 11 books, most set in North Carolina or right here in Virginia, several set right here in Richmond. Howard Owen comes by this honestly. He was born in North Carolina. He works in Virginia. He was sports editor for the Richmond newspapers. He is now an editor for the Fredericksburg Freelance Star, and he was with us once before on the Writer's Voice for his book, Little John. Howard, welcome.
Thank you. And since I was here for Little John, I guess it's been 20 years, so it's good to see you again.
Now, let's get down to the really important things. Which is better tasting, North Carolina barbecue or Virginia barbecue?
I am not a purist about that. We were having a discussion at a tailgate party on Saturday about that. I'm truly not a purist. I grew up on the vinegar-based Eastern North Carolina barbecue, but the stuff I do now, I buy a pork butt, throw it into a crock pot with a lot of spicy and sweet stuff, and it's more Virginia than North Carolina when I'm through with it.
We will be talking about a couple of your latest books, Oregon Hill, set here in Richmond, featuring reporter Willie Black, and The Philadelphia Quarry, another Willie Black story. And those living here in the Richmond area will recognize all the places in Oregon Hill and The Philadelphia Quarry, the streets, the restaurants, the major places. It's rare to find a book set in Richmond. You'd already written 9 books before. What was your inspiration for Willie Black?
Well, my inspiration for Willie Black for writing a mystery at all was this thing. I think it's been about 3.5 years ago now. We did this book called Richmond Noir. It was a collection of detective noir short stories set in Richmond. Akasic Books up in Brooklyn had been doing this for a long time in big cities around the world, and somehow Tom DeHaven and a couple of other editors here convinced them that there were enough good writers around Richmond that we could do 15 or 16 detective noir short stories set in real neighborhoods in Richmond. I was asked to do one of them. I'd never written a mystery before. But once I agreed to do it because if there's a chance for somebody to read something I write, I always say yes. But when I started doing it, I realized that my guy was not going to be a detective. He was going to be a night cops reporter, because that's what I knew. I've worked for newspapers since I got out of college. So I invented Willie Black, and I liked his first-person voice and his persona enough that I thought that I could do a book or two or three, a whole novel with him in it, and so that's how I came to start writing mysteries, and how the Willie Black series came to be. My first 9 novels were all what I guess you'd call literary fiction.
Well, you had written a novel about a truck driver who had a book inside him. He wanted to get out.
Right. Well, you write what you know. That's most of what I write is a lot of times they're almost all set in Virginia and North Carolina, because that's where I've lived. And a lot of them are set around newspapers. Some of them have sports hooks to them because I used to be a sports editor. So, you write what you know.
You wrote, you invented an extended family for Willie Black.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun doing that. I mean, any, real person has got a lot of connections. You know, one of the things about when you're making up a novel, you don't want to just have this guy knowing 3 or 4 people. If he's going to be a real person, he's going to have his family, which Willie's got his single parent mom and his daughter. He's got all of his friends from Oregon Hill that he grew up with, that he stayed in touch with. He's got all the newspaper family there, so you can get all of the noirish things that are happening to newspapers in the early 21st century in there. He's got his buddies on the cops beat. He's got people that he knows around town. He's got 3 ex-wives, 2 of them living in Richmond. So you've got, the more you build into it, the more you can pull out when you start writing the story.
I have to repeat that these, for those who are listening, the stories are set right here in Richmond in places you know. And I want to say now, and I'll say it again at the end, that there are audiobook versions of both Oregon Hill and The Philadelphia Quarry. So they're in paperback, hardback, and audiobook.
And Oregon Hill will soon be in Italian, in case you wanted to read it that way.
I chuckle because in Italian would they know about Richmond?
I wish I knew enough Italian to, when the book comes out, be able to understand it, but I don't.
I don't want you to give away the plot of either of the book, but I think you can give a little bit of the of Willie Black's newspaper experience and his relationship, as you mentioned, to the police, to his newspaper family. That's changing. That relationship is changing.
Yeah, Willie's in his 50s when the when Oregon Hill opens, and he's had an up and down career. He came to work for the Richmond paper right out of VCU, and he started out on the night cops beat, which is the kind of thing sometimes is kind of like boot camp for reporters. You're out there when, you know, people get killed in the middle of the night. You're the person that goes out and covers it. And you see a lot of the city, and some people get burned out on it. Some people thrive on it. Over the years, Willie worked his way up to the Plum State House beat, covering the governor, covering the legislature, and all that. But he's had a problem. He's had an issue with authority his whole life. And when his a new executive editor comes in and demands that he do something that he thinks is beyond the pale, he refuses to do it. And instead of firing him, they knock him back to night cops, the beat that he'd left for good 25 years ago. He smokes, he drinks too much. He's been divorced 3 times, and now he's on a beat where the logical thing to do when you get off work is go drink until about 4 o'clock in the morning.
I know you have said adamantly that there is no resemblance to people living or dead, but is this a composite?
It's a composite, like every novel I've written. It's like a quilt. You know, you just make it from bits and pieces, all the scraps that you've accumulated all through your memory and other people's stories and everything else.
Is it common for a reporter to defy his boss in search of a story that he knows is there?
It has been known to happen, yes. The better reporters, really good reporters, are A personality types. They are the people that they are not shrinking violets. They, to be able to go out and get the stories that they get, they have to be their personalities can be a little fractious, and they don't do well with it. They think they have an editor who is an idiot and is asking them to do something really bad. Sometimes they can't hold their tongues. I've seen a lot of reporters get in trouble like that.
You have been both a reporter and an editor. You've been a boss and reporting to a boss. So I guess you understand both ends of it.
Yeah, I've seen it on both sides, definitely, over 42 years now.
Is it normal in one book Willie travels to Boston on his own ticket? Is that kind of normal for a reporter to do?
Well, it is. Most newspaper people in the newsroom, especially reporters, you know, do a lot of things on their own ticket. It's not an 8-hour job. It's not a clock punching job. I mean, the people that do it best might come in and work 15 hours straight and then disappear the next day. It's you work, you follow the story. You don't punch out at 5 o'clock or 5:30.
You're listening to Howard Owen, whose two latest books are Oregon Hill and The Philadelphia Quarry. He had written 9 others prior to that. Little John, Rock of Ages, Fat Lightning, The Measured Man, many more. And we're talking specifically about Richmond because these books are set in Richmond, Virginia. You're hearing 2 books at once, and we're not really talking about the plot of either. But The Philadelphia Quarry... And originally, I thought, this is a book about Philadelphia. Huh. Wrong. It's right here in Richmond. Tell us about that.
I'd never heard of the Philadelphia Quarry until I had lived in Richmond over 20 years. It is one of our neighbors at the Presswood said that it's the most exclusive club in Richmond. But it doesn't look very exclusive. It's a swimming hole. It's over on over near the river on the very shishy part of town, but it's just back in the 19th and I guess early 20th century, they quarried stone there, and a lot of the stone was sent up to Philadelphia to build some of the big public buildings there, which is why they called it the Philadelphia Quarry. Most people just call it the quarry now. Sometime in the 30s, a group of people, probably in Windsor Farms, bought it and turned it into their private swimming hole. And I started hearing about it when we moved to the, Karen, my wife and I moved to the Presswood in 2000, and some people there were members had friends who were members and invited us out there a couple of times. And it's just this neat little quarry there. It's a great place to go on a hot summer day, but it's very, like I said, it's very private. Most people don't know about it. I don't think people are going to be beating the doors down to get there now, because it's just a quarry. It's just a swimming hole.
Howard, you mentioned the Prestwood, and Willie Black is living at the Prestwood through the sufferance of one of his ex-wives.
Right.
I chuckle because the Prestwood is populated with some characters too.
Well, we lived there for 7 years, and we loved the Prestwood. We lived there until we moved to Fredericksburg in 2007. And there's a lot of people there who can tell you a lot of stories about old Richmond. There we got so much, felt like we were drenched in Richmond history when we lived there.
Tell us a little bit about writing. You if you had your druthers, you'd turn out a book a year. That's tough. Well, at least it would be for me. For you, does it come naturally?
Well, right now, what I've done since 1989 is I average writing an hour a day. In a perfect world, where nothing else happened except writing, I would spend more time than that. But I've never taken a sabbatical. I've worked all this time. I've not taken any time off just to write. I think I took 3 days vacation time one time to polish a book. But what I realized early on was that I can write 2 pages of manuscript in an hour, and if you're consistent with it, you can do you can do a book. You can do a first draft of a book in a few months if you know where you're going with it.
Howard, is the plot the entire plot in your head before you start?
No, it evolves as I go along. I start out with an outline I can do the whole outline for any book that I've written when I start out on one sheet of paper, one sheet of legal pad. And that's just kind of a guide. I have a lot of, I spend a lot of time making up the characters, building as much life as I can into the characters. I spend more time with that than I do with developing the plot. The plot, I have a basic place I know I'm going with the plot, but it evolves as the book goes on. I'll change that outline several times.
Well, you jerked me around in Oregon Hill, so I wondered if you knew ahead of time where you were taking me.
Not at the outset, not really, not at the beginning, but things happen. You know, somebody does a particular thing, and you realize because they do that thing, they could have a part in the climax of the book that you didn't plan on to start with.
This may be a stupid question, but indulge me. Do you write the characters, or do the characters talk to you?
I try to listen to the characters. I mean, I'll sit there when I'm doing dialogue. I won't usually read it out loud, but in my head, I'm reading it to see if it sounds like people actually talk. I mean, Elmore Leonard is like one of the best writers I know for writing dialogue. You know, so if it sounds like if it sounds like they're giving a speech, don't do it. Rewrite it. It's got to sound the way you've got to have people talking the way they actually talk. One of the worst things that writers, especially young writers, do, I think, with books, is give speeches. They have their characters giving speeches. They have them telling you something you need to know with quote marks around it, and that's not the way people talk.
You've written many books about North that were set in North Carolina. Did you have fun setting books in Richmond, this specific city?
I did, and the funny thing is I wrote both of those Richmond books in Fredericksburg. I left Richmond before I did this. I'd set parts of other books here too, but I find it's easier to write about a place if you don't live there. I don't know why that is. I, Hemingway said something about that in A Movable Feast, about something to the effect that, you know, it was easier to write about, you know, trout fishing in Michigan from Paris than from back in the States. And I find that to be true. I was, my first book, Little John, I found I hadn't lived in North Carolina at that time for almost 20 years, but I found it was very easy to write about it. And I'm not sure if I'd been living in the little village I grew up in, if I could have written the same book.
Howard, when you mentioned that it's easier to write from afar, you do give specific directions, like Willie walking from the Prestwood to the newspaper, or mm-hmm. from the newspaper to the police station, and you talk about which street and how many blocks.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's nice to have that in there. I mean, you can put too much detail in, but I wanted to seem real. I mean, I walked that walk for 7 years, so it was very easy to identify with that. I pretty much knew every crack in the sidewalk, every brick that was out of place between the Prestwood and the Times Dispatch.
While the characters are totally made up and not meant to personify any person living or dead, you're not shy about naming streets, specific restaurants.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Do they
yeah.
pay you for that?
Well, I wish they would. I wish Mama Zoo, and I love Mama Zoo. That would be great. No, I think it gives some. I don't see any reason not to use real place names on there. I don't want to name people because they're not, the people are, like I said, there are montages. But I think it really adds some authenticity to it if you can talk about the Spaghetti Caruso at Mama Zoo's, you know, instead of just having some generic dish at some generic restaurant somewhere.
We are talking to Howard Owen, who is the author of 11 books, but very specifically, 2 books set in Richmond, Oregon Hill and The Philadelphia Quarry. They are available in hardback, paperback, and an audio version. Howard, you've set some books in North Carolina. There was one that is The Rail. To say it's about baseball is to miss the thing, but you were a sports editor. You knew what you were doing there.
Yeah, I really enjoyed The Rail. I mean, I said that in some this fictional town out in the country, out in Virginia. But I found it was a very easy book to write because I have this I have a brain full of worthless baseball trivia. I know for some reason I can name most of the members of the Yankees and the Milwaukee Braves from the 1957 World Series, and yet I have a lot of trouble remembering who was in the World Series last year. I don't know what it is about memory. It seems like the old things stick and the big things just slide off the top.
In one of your books, The Measured Man, as I recall, the blacks in the community wanted to set up a slavery museum, and the whites did not. That sounds very familiar.
It was my hometown of Fayetteville, North Carolina. When I was a boy, the center of the town was the Market House. There was a traffic circle that went around it. One side of the street was all black African-American shops. The other side was white. And it had been a slave market. It had been a slave market, and then it was just a market. Up until the 1960s, I guess, and I use that. They didn't have that kind of run in there, but that could happen in any southern city, especially any city fall line colonial southern city. When I wrote that book, I had not, I never thought I'd be living in Fredericksburg, but I did a signing in Fredericksburg, and the publisher. And the publisher's son are two of the main characters in the book. They have this big row about whether they're going to support the slavery museum or not. And one of the when I did the signing in Fredericksburg, this guy came up and asked me questions about, you know, newspapers. Was I writing about Fredericksburg and all that? And I told him no. And he bought like 18 copies of the book and had me sign each one of them. It turned out he was a son of one of the two brothers who owned the Freelance Star at that time. And he had me sign each one of them. This is not the Rowe family. And I see that guy now. I mean, he's still around Fredericksburg now. He's in, it's, we laugh about that. It's like probably 15, 18 years ago now, I guess.
In another one of your books, Howard, you wrote Harry and Ruth about a New York Jewish man who wanted to marry a Southern Presbyterian woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And sounds like A.B.'s Irish Rose in a way, but it's not because it turns out far differently.
Well, you try to draw on the things that you know and the things that fascinate you in life when you're making up fiction. I've always been fascinated with hurricanes. And the hurricane, a couple of hurricanes are kind of the central characters in this book. And I drew on memories that I had when in eastern North Carolina, where I grew up, Hurricane Hazel, like 1954, is still legendary. There's still people in their 80s who talk about that now. And I can remember when it came through before there was any, before you had the Weather Channel, before you had television in most places down there. And it just sneaked up on everybody. I can remember being stuck with my grandparents in their farmhouse. My parents were trapped on the other side of the river at work because nobody got warning like you do now. Now you know 28 days ahead of time when there's a hurricane coming. And so I built that into there. I built a lot about hurricanes. Just probably too much information about how hurricanes form and how the right side's more dangerous than the left side because the wind is going in a counterclockwise direction, all that.
Howard Owen is the author of 11 books. I brought him into the studio so you could hear about Oregon Hill and the Philadelphia Quarry. We're ranging far afield. Howard's profession is newspapers, and the two latter books are about newspapers. But, Howard, what's happening in the newspaper industry? Willie is very down on this.
Yeah, Willie. Your character. Willie's old school, and I'm like that, and most people my age are like that who work for newspapers now. We have all of us sat around 20 years ago, 15 years ago, complaining bitterly that our newspapers were giving away all their content by putting it on the internet for free, and it has hurt. It's hurt a lot. I don't know what could have been done differently at that time. I guess if every newspaper in the world had said we're going to charge for content, maybe it would have worked out. But it's so easy to steal somebody's content on the internet. I don't know what else they could have done. I think. I'm sure that in the not too distant future, after I'm gone probably, it'll all sort out. I mean, people are used to reading news now on their tablets and all, and they're getting used to paying a little bit for that. And all you have to do is pay a little bit. If you pay one quarter as much to get a newspaper online as you do having one delivered to your door, most newspapers can still pay the bills. You don't have printing presses, you don't have paper, you don't have that 19th century delivery system where somebody takes it right to your front door. But it's just going to take a while to sort it out.
We have all noticed, however, that good reporters are being sacked. They're being fired.
Mm-hmm.
And papers are reducing their reporting staff. There seems to be not enough reporters to adequately cover the news.
And that's worrisome. That is very worrisome. You see it in Washington. Everybody, the first thing most newspapers cut was copy editing. The second thing they cut was their Washington bureaus, because you don't have to have that. You have the Associated Press and the New York Times and a few other people there, but you don't have enough people keeping an eye on people who, they might not be bad people, but if nobody's watching, they might do bad things. And there aren't enough people watching in Washington right now.
We also know what you mentioned, the lack of copy editing. Some proofreading errors are getting through now.
Yeah, if you have a choice between quality and content, you're going to go with content. You got to have something there. And that's what's happening with it.
Good journalism will always be needed, but how will the reporters get paid in the future?
When this all sorts out to the point that people accept the fact that, their monthly online newspaper bill is just like part of their lives, like the print newspaper bill used to be, except much less, then it'll work out. There'll be enough money to pay reporters to do reporting. But it's tough right now. I mean, when we were in the 70s and 80s, into the 90s, there was a big wall between advertising and news. And that wall, I mean, if you need money to pay the bills, that wall starts cracking. And you wind up in a situation where people who shouldn't have influence over what's in the paper maybe have influence on it if you're not careful.
Many of us non-newspaper people have always heard that advertising is what pays the newspaper bills, mm-hmm. and the subscription price pretty much pays for just the distribution. Is that fair or not?
I think it's fair. It's fair as far as it goes. I think that the, I think that's true.
But advertising is falling off.
It is. It is. But advertising, you know, if you have an online product where you just, again, you don't have to buy paper, and newsprint is almost as big a cost for newspapers as salaries are. If you don't have that newsprint to buy, and you don't have those presses to run, and you don't have a whole army of freelance people delivering the paper, you know, your cost goes down a lot. You might not even have a newsroom anymore, although I would surely hate to see that. I mean, it's possible to just send everybody out with a laptop and never see each other. I think that's a bad thing. I hope it never comes to that, because some of the best news stories out there happen because people in the newsroom are talking to each other. Somebody knows half of the story and somebody else knows half of the story. But it's doable. The Washington Post right now intrigues me because they've been bought, and the guy, I guess, with Amazon has bought them, and he's got enough money to lose a little money short term to make that transition over to where you really are a really large major newspaper that is only online, and if you want it, you got to pay for it.
You're hearing about the insides of the newspaper industry, but if you read both Oregon Hill and the Philadelphia Story, you'll hear why it becomes so important. You get an inside look. You also hear about Richmond, Virginia, all the places around Richmond, in two very wonderful plots, different plots, and you will really enjoy it. By the way, again, I'll say that they're available in hardback, in paperback, and in audiobooks. So you'll enjoy either Oregon Hill or the Philadelphia Quarry, or both. Howard Owen is the author. Howard, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Writer's Voice on The Virginia Voice. And for The Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean.